Central Pittsburgh, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. A new batch of summer movies is out, or coming out, and here to look at them with us is Pittsburgh City Paper film critic Al Hoff. Al, welcome back to the show. Welcome back to Studio A. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks, Paul.
A interesting batch of movies to talk about this week, starting with a docudrama called Fruitvale Station, which is particularly timely in the wake of the news of the George Zimmerman verdict and some of the anger over the Trayvon Martin case. This is a story that is similar to that particular incident.
Yeah, it has some similarities. People may remember this case. It happened New Year's Eve 2008 in Oakland, California. There was a fight on the subway train and it spilled into the station, Fruitvale Station for the title. And a young black man was essentially detained by the police. He was sort of forced down. And in the course of the hustle and bustle and chaos of this event, he was shot and died the next day. He was unarmed. He hadn't really been involved in anything, according to eyewitnesses. So this movie is about the day before, though it opens with the cell phone footage that some people shot of the actual event. You actually see this all transpire before you even the movie starts. And then the filmmaker just goes back and looks at this guy's day, New Year's Day, to essentially present this sort of case of, you know, here's a young man who wasn't a perfect person. He had good sides. He had bad sides. He was kind of a jerk. He was a nice guy. But he ended up in this weird situation that became this sort of racial flashpoint in Oakland because, of course, it was another – there's a lot of bad police community relations in Oakland.
You guys got plans for the night?
To meet up with the fellas, head out to the city.
Why don't you take the train out there? That way you guys can hang out and not have to worry about anything.
Hey, Oscar.
How are you?
I'm good. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Oscar from Pharmacia?
Get off the train now! Put that phone in there.
Are you still on the train?
We're still at Fruitvale.
Why can't you tell me what is going on? What is the problem? What did you do? Oh my God.
It's an interesting movie in that essentially it's not really kind of taking a side. It's just sort of asking you to consider this life because this guy went out on New Year's Eve with his girlfriend, the mother of his young child, and he never came home because he was sort of, you know, inadvertently shot and was it a racially motivated shooting. It's got a very good young actor who plays the young man, Oscar Grant, Michael P. Jordan. People may have remembered him from the first season of The Wire, where he played the doomed Wallace, the young drug dealer. He was also in Friday Night Lights. He's a really great young actor, and actually it's just I think he really carries this film because he presents Oscar Grant, the young man, as this sort of complex person. He's like Trayvon Martin, it's not a sort of a monolithic one side or the other. You know, he wasn't a perfect guy, but he wasn't a bad guy either.
Sounds like pretty much everybody.
Well, correct. I mean, and of course, everyone has the expectation if they go out for the evening and you're not necessarily doing anything wrong, or even if you're just kind of being loud and mouthy because it's New Year's Eve, that you're not going to end up dead lying on the subway platform.
Well, you lived in the Bay Area. The BART is a place that kind of breeds strange incidents, the subway system there.
Well, it's hard to know. I mean, it's, you know, New Year's Eve obviously is never a good night to be out if you're looking to avoid trouble. But on the same token, this film sort of presents that as, you know, everybody else is out. You know, was this guy targeted, you know, because he was a young black man and the cop essentially made an assumption about him? And the filmmaker, I don't think, is really trying to essentially say one way or the other. The cop did do some time for the shooting. But it's a rather sort of interesting way of looking at a case that's similar to Trayvon Martin, which is like...
It opens up a dialogue about racial profiling.
Exactly.
And this movie comes out today, so people can see it in Pittsburgh.
It's at the Manor.
And hopefully it'll be around for a while. It sounds like a very compelling movie. Now, on to regular narrative movies for a moment here, starting with a scary movie that did well at the box office.
It did very well.
To the tune of some $40 million when it opened last week, The Conjuring, which stars, among others, a very interesting actor who always takes a wise, understated approach, Ron Livingston, who brings that Midwest Iowa native sensibility to the big screen. But does this movie work?
I mean, it's essentially a ghost movie, a haunted house story like every other one you've seen. I mean, part of me was laughing because all these ghosts in this movie do the same thing. They creak doorways, they appear in mirrors, they whisper things to children. You know, they levitate objects. I was sort of saying to myself, don't ghosts, isn't there any other kind of ghosts? Like, don't they ever do anything else when they come to haunt you? But this director, James Wan, who I must say directed Saw and gave us that whole realm of torture porn films, has dialed it back for this film. This is pretty much an old-fashioned ghost story where a family moves into their spooky farmhouse of their dreams, and then they end up hiring a pair of demonologists who are actually based on a real-life couple who worked in the whole Northeast. They worked on the house that was the Amityville Horror and some other sort of well-known ghost stories. You know, whether or not you believe how much of this is true is kind of up to you. The pleasure in this movie is sitting there when the mother goes into the basement and the light flicks off and there's a noise in the corner and then the light flicks on. And
that really does sound old, like the old-fashioned.
It is. It's mysteriously rated R because I don't really recall what was in it that would have given it an R rating, so people should not be dissuaded perhaps by that. It wasn't particularly goring. I don't remember a lot of profanity.
Well,
there's no time
work?
For what, any what, personal what, relations in the bedroom.
Right, the ghosts. There's too many ghosts.
There's too many ghosts. I'm not sure why it was rated R.
So what makes it work? I mean, why are people gravitating to this film, do you think?
You know, people enjoy being scared. It's a vicarious thing. It's like being on the roller coaster. I mean, it's a safe way of processing that. I mean, that's why horror movies are always so popular. And you know, I'm joking about the same things happen in horror movies, but people do sort of enjoy the familiarity of it. You know, when she opens the door to go in the basement, you know, every single person is like, don't go in the basement. You know, haven't you seen any movies?
So can you bring the kids to this movie, or are you going to have them knocking on your bedroom door at night going, Mom, Dad, I can't sleep?
I'm not going to advocate bringing kids to an R-rated horror movie, but
but you said there's no sex or violence.
Yeah, I mean, there's not. I mean, There's a cynical like muttering amongst film critics that they essentially just ask for an R rating to make it more attractive as a horror movie because PG-13 sounds too tame.
But if you're below teenage, you're saying don't bring the kids.
I mean, it's rated R. Parents are going to have to make their own decisions.
Okay, well, The Conjuring. We'll keep that one in mind. There's also, you know, along the vein of the supernatural, RIPD, which seems to, on the surface, be a good idea. You have a couple of good actors in the movie. Jeff Bridges, a fairly recent Oscar winner, and also the very popular Ryan Reynolds. But somehow this movie is not striking a chord either with audiences or you, Al Hoff. Why not?
It's bad. I mean, it's bad.
I'm just going to put it out there.
I didn't have a chance to see another After Earth, the Will Smith bomb, so I can't say for sure whether this is the bomb of the summer or that one was, but this film is not good. People may want to see it just for the sort of, you know, schadenfreude of seeing something terrible up on the screen. It's a buddy cop movie, except the cops are dead. I mean, that's how bereft of ideas they seem to be. It's sort of a mix of Men in Black and Ghostbusters, where these two dead cops have to come back to Earth and search for people that are dead but look like they're living and are traumatized by Indian food. I'm not making that up. There are these bizarre scenes where Jeff Bridges, who plays this Old West marshal, is like shoving chicken masala into the face of some dead guy and he's freaking out. It's like something out of Monty Python that just doesn't make any sense at all.
All right. Maybe we'll save our money and avoid that one.
People can see it, but they should be forewarned.
Fair enough. Red 2. Here's a movie where they bring together old secret agents, and it stars Bruce Willis and also Mary Louise Parker and Helen Mirren.
Yes.
As well as John Malkovich. You have some real acting talent here, but this is another movie that maybe just because it was one too many in terms of the sequel, but it's not resonating with people.
I mean, it's a sequel to Red, which stands for Retired Extremely Dangerous. These are retired spies who apparently live unfulfilled lives that they can't be shooting people or blowing things up. So they essentially get together and do that. The first one was sort of a novelty because, like you say, you have these very good actors like Helen Mirren, like grabbing an RPG and, like, you know, blasting something. It's not as fun the second time around, like any of these things. The movie feels a little lazy, a little more snarky. a little bit more like people are just cashing a paycheck, to be honest with you.
They added the Catherine Zeta-Jones to the mix.
Yeah, she plays a Russian spy. They've sort of made her look dusky and strange, and it's, I don't know. The highlight of the movie probably is Anthony Hopkins, who sort of plays like a batty old English scientist. He's the one that's invented the crazy Cold War weapon of mass destruction they're searching for. And he's, of course, he's such a great actor. You know, anything he does is delightful.
But, he was amazing in Hitchcock.
But it's one of those things where you're just like, are you guys just getting together for the free lunch? And, like to work out on the shooting range?
Craft services on this set is really, really good. Okay, well, another one to perhaps stay away from. So let's go back to movies rooted in the documentary structure, even though when we talked about Fruitvale Station, we were talking about a docudrama. But there are a couple of pure documentaries about rock bands.
Yeah, I want to direct anyone who's interested in music, especially more obscure music, I want to completely direct their attention to this weekend because there's two documentaries playing only this weekend, Friday through Sunday, so they need to pay attention. One is at Melwood. It's called A Band Called Death. It's been getting some good press out on the coast. It's essentially the story of three African-American brothers in Detroit in 1975 who put out an album of just driving guitar rocking music that just goes nowhere. It essentially, black audiences don't want to hear it because it's rock. White audiences don't want to hear it because these guys look like big Afro, orange-shirted soul brothers, and it just dies. And it's this crazy sort of proto-punk album that's like decades ahead of its time.
Like Living Color two decades earlier.
Exactly. So this filmmaker goes and finds these brothers and essentially traces what happened to this album, what happened to them. It's very similar to Searching for Sugar Man. It's a similar sort of documentary about some musicians who were kind of ahead of their time and just kind of disappeared into obscurity.
It was a great time. It was that Motown time.
And, you know, here we are in the middle of all of this playing rock and roll.
Nobody was making music like that in 73.
Three black brothers from Detroit, Michigan.
What were they called?
They were called Death.
That's a good name.
Have you lost your mind?
He told us you guys might have a record deal if you change the name.
Absolutely not. We are fighting to maintain our identity.
It's pretty hard to be black playing rock because you had to be Motown if you were black.
White boy music.
We got turned down by every major label.
I just put the tapes in a safe place. I didn't think about it.
The other is a documentary about the Memphis band Big Star, which has many cult fans. Any indie band from the 80s and 90s will name check Big Star as one of their influences. They were a sort of a pop rock band put together by Alex Chilton, who used to be in the Box Tops. And they also made three really great forward-thinking rock pop albums.
And the Box Tops, for people who are not familiar, they're the band's famous for the song The Letter.
Correct.
Covered famously by Joe Cocker.
Correct. But it's one of these weird things where because of like record label problems and personal dramas in the band and the industry just kind of not being ready to hear it, nothing really sort of happened. So this is a fascinating documentary where they talk to surviving band members and studio people and other musicians and just kind of trace the story of Big Star, this band that should have been popular and should have been acknowledged at their time but just weren't.
Rolling Stone says this is the greatest stuff we've ever heard and you can't find it in a record store.
They didn't last for very long, and they didn't tour very much.
He couldn't find anybody who would support his music.
I'm sure that was a factor in his emotional problems.
That left Alice kind of on his own.
I think there was a certain kind of self-destructiveness.
He was an anti-star.
It seemed like Alex had sabotaged himself all the time.
There's a sadness to it because those are some of the best records in that decade, and they just didn't get heard.
So those are two documentaries I'm definitely recommending for music heads.
All right, so to review, Fruitvale Station, a must-see, you're
very
saying.
Good, yes.
As well as A Band called Death and the other rockumentary,
Big Star. Big Star. Nothing Can Hurt Me.
So a yes on those, and you're saying Al Hoff, avoid Red 2, R.I.P.D., and but not The Conjuring.
You know, The Conjuring is what it is. It's, you know, if you want to see like a creaky door haunted house story, it's that, and it's not a bad version of it.
Al Hoff reviews movies for the Pittsburgh City Paper and Essential Pittsburgh, joining us here in Studio A. Al, thank you again.
You're welcome.
Tonight, Essential Pittsburgh takes a summer break. We invite you to sample Wits, a live comedy and performance hour with host John Moe. Tonight's guest will be joining John at 8, and you can tell us what you think of the show at comments@WESA.FM. That's Wits, tonight at 8 on 90.5 WESA. Until Monday, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again with another edition of Essential Pittsburgh.